Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it.
Take it. It's all over.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts, part of the Fight Fans Radio Network and the iHeartRadio Talk platform, plus brought to you by Gun Lake Casinos and Honest Supplements, online at onnit.com/wowshow. We had a fight on Fox Sports 1 on Wednesday. We will talk about that. We will talk about the greatest tough season of all time. Tough 8, isn't that what I have to say after every season?
Is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, the greatest of all time. The most explosive season? I don't know.
It's the most estrogen-filled season of The Ultimate Fighter in history.
Not including the season that had Chris Lieben on it. Plus, we will talk about UFC 164. Happened on Saturday night. History was made. It was a really special night for the sport, for sure. It was an interesting night full of a lot of crazy controversy in some of the ridiculous scoring, and we can talk a little bit about Josh Barnett's early stoppage, if you call it that, over Frank Mir.
What do you mean, you looked right at me and said, if you call it that?
First of all, there's only two people on the show right now, so who else would I look at?
I don't want you looking at me during the show. Fair. It's like when I have sex with people, I would prefer they just look away.
All right, but we start with Anthony Pettis defeating Benson Henderson by submission, 4:31 of round number one. Dana White coming out and saying, look, there will be no trilogy. And as Sean said on Facebook, why would you want to see that?
Who is talking about a trilogy? Who is talking about a rematch?
That's how these things happen. You get to these post-fight pressers, and they ask the questions they're going to ask, and then Dana does this thing that, if you haven't watched it on our Facebook page or on MMAfighting.com, they do this thing called the scrum, where he sits down after the press conference, and that's when you can ask him the insider stuff. And of course, every time there's somebody who wants to ask the dumb question. Even though he got beat both times, can we do a third one?
I just want to know if anybody asked him how much Tide Benson Henderson's going to need to scrub that stain off his soul, because that's what he wanted to do in this fight after losing in WEC. And man, I'm not sure. I feel like this was an even worse loss. He didn't look like he had a ton for Pettis there. There were some moments in the fight, and Pettis just basically turned everything around where he wanted it to go and did what he wanted to do, and had one of the nastiest looking arm bars I've seen, probably short of Frank Mir on Tim Sylvia, where he had that arm over top. Initially, I didn't even think he had the arm bar, Eric, because a lot of times you see the guys when they're trying to hold their arms to keep the guy from pulling the other arm. And I thought that's what Benson was doing because his other arm was in there. I didn't realize until the camera angle changed that basically Anthony Pettis was making a crucifix out of Benson Henderson's arms and was basically saying, I'm going to break one of these two. I don't know which one's going to go first.
I haven't decided.
You work out your right side or your left side more in the gym. Doesn't matter because one of these arms is going to break. And we got a very strange scream, pop, verbal tap that the referee wasn't even sure of when it happened. Anthony Pettis knew he won that fight, though. And there was absolutely no arguing from Benson Henderson.
None at all. And what was even more interesting is as that fight started, you saw Benson start controlling against the octagon. And I thought, oh, here we go.
You really thought? See, I didn't think. It's hard to break down what happened in basically 3 minutes before the exchange on the ground. I didn't see any domination there.
I saw a lot of feeling out and grinding is what we're going to grind him against the fence and try and wear him out. But when Pettis got some room and started throwing those leg kicks to his body,
that was brutal.
I don't know that I've watched a lot of Benson's fights. Obviously, you don't really see that look too often on his face. That look of, I'm pretty sure my brain just shorted out because that hurt a lot more than I even thought I could manage to understand.
And he took a lot of them considering the fight time. I think there were four big hard body kicks landed in that fight. And it didn't look like he was able to do anything. He wasn't moving. He was able to check, I believe, one of the kicks in the first minute or so. But after that, you kind of saw Pettis realizing, he's not in range if I throw this kick, and I can just lay it right into him. And these weren't glancing blows.
No.
And I think that's what forced the whole exchange where you saw Benson Henderson try to tighten things up, ends up on the ground. You noted the can opener that kind of opened him up for that arm bar. This fight's over, and in 4 minutes, we've got a new champion.
And a new champion that blew his knee out. We had been talking about this leading up, you know, and even Dana had said there's no way that Anthony Pettis is going to be ready for this fight. He was ready for the fight, but at some point in the middle of the fight, his knee popped. He is out for at least 8 weeks, but he already has his contender lined up. There obviously will not be a trilogy between him and Benson Henderson, so the Frankie Edgar kiss doesn't happen in this scenario. What you get instead is TJ Grant. Although TJ Grant is clearly cursed because immediately following this fight, there was all the talk about Aldo. And Pettis doesn't care where that fight happens. He'll go down to 145. They can do it at 155. It doesn't matter. And Ken, this is the part where you jump in and tell me that TJ Grant will never get a title shot because Aldo's going to go first.
Well, here's why he might get a title shot. I can tell you this time. This 8 weeks is, if it's right, if it's real, if that's the timeline, it's nothing considering the guy just fought a fight. He wasn't going to fight in 8 weeks anyways.
Sure.
He certainly wasn't going to fight TJ Grant in 8 weeks.
Right.
What happens here with TJ Grant is he's doesn't have anything scheduled, does he?
I mean, that was what he was scheduled for.
He was waiting and waiting and waiting. So, we've got a timeline that should work out for him depending on where he wants to take the fight. Because I don't think we're going to see, at this point, Dana really excited about that Aldo fight. It could be a big moneymaker, but still, let's remember, Pettis just won the championship. A lot of guys saw him beat a guy who's held the belt a long time, but not the most popular guy in the division. I mean, I made a joke on Twitter. It seems like every time somebody lighter than 155 fights, I'm not sure if I want to spend the $10 on the HD or not. and that's kind of how the general public feels.
Sure.
This wasn't Anderson Silva losing to Chris Weidman, where all of a sudden you've got a star in Chris Weidman. You've got a solid, marketable, magnificent fighter in Anthony Pettis, but I think you need to get him another fight or two before you want him conceivably taking out two of your divisions, because that's a lot riding on one guy, and he's already started playing the head games with Jose Aldo. He did it in the cage. He said, you come after my belt, I'll come after yours, anybody's belt, and then his manager, and I think Aldo's got to tell his manager, why don't you shut up? You're giving him all kinds of room to play head games here, because
right.
The manager's like, we will only fight at our weight. And then you told me something else. What else does the manager say?
He said, Aldo's manager said on Sunday morning, if Pettis would like this fight, we expect him to relinquish the lightweight belt to come down to 145.
Basically what the manager's doing, and that's what a manager's supposed to do, other than say it to the press.
Okay.
He's supposed to try to manage the fighter and keep the fighter managed in a way where he should be defending his belt, where he should be making the most money. Some people argue whether or not the manager should be putting fighters in a position to win. I'm one of those guys that thinks that's what a manager should do.
Sure.
Promoters, other guys booking, and the UFC, they're fighting against that, but I think that's what a manager's supposed to do, protect the fighter. He's saying the things that I would expect him to say, but perhaps behind closed doors. Like, we're not going to fight this guy unless he gives up the title. We're not going to fight him unless he comes down to your weight. We're not going to do this, this, or this unless he does this. We're basically going to set up enough conditions for him to either not want to fight at this point, or that we are in a very advantageous position. You lose a bit of that advantage, though, in a game like fighting. In a game where you've got to have your head in it, and you've got to feel like you can beat him no matter what, and you don't want that guy to have a mental advantage. With all these conditions, it seems like Aldo doesn't want the Pettis fight, and that puts Pettis in a great position if this fight ever happens.
It certainly does, but the statement about relinquishing the title is ridiculous, since most of this sport is built on guys like Dan Henderson. Three-weight championship, Randy Couture, none of those guys had to get rid of their belts to fight Anderson. He didn't have to throw his pride belt in the trash to fight Anderson Silva.
Well, I see, again, I think the manager is saying the right things, and that may be a good move. You want the guy to relinquish the belt because you don't want him jumping back and forth. You want an opportunity for your guy to do that rematch. We've been talking about rematches in the show, as we always do. If you've got a guy who's defending two belts, he comes down, he beats your guy that you're managing.
Right.
Oh, amazing. Two-division champion. And next, he'll be going back to 155 to fight.
I know, but remember that awesome shot of Alistair over him when he has, like, 77 belts all over him? Like, that's the sport to me. Why wouldn't John Jones want to be the heavyweight and light heavyweight champion?
I'm not saying Anthony Pettis wouldn't, but if you're the manager, you want to say that. Now, UFC can tell him to go wherever they want him to go on this stipulation. They may not want it either. I mean,
Anthony Pettis want to be flyweight, bantamweight, featherweight, and
Anthony Pettis would.
Wouldn't he, Ken?
I'm not saying he wouldn't, but you've got to admit there's a lot of contributing factors, especially if you're Aldo's manager in this fight. I can easily see why not. And I think you can make a compelling case for the UFC where two division champion maybe isn't the best thing, because they basically need to rotate these guys now through pay-per-views, especially once you get 155 and up.
It seems to me to be a double standard, as after the Jung fight, when he beat the Korean Zombie, he was talking about going up to 155 and at no point said he was going to relinquish his belt. So what's the difference?
I think that's that line of demarcation, that 155 weight limit. I think that's where we end up seeing the free fights on TV. That's where we end up seeing these guys headline Fox cards. They're counting on everybody 155 and up to pay-per-view, to make real money.
Yes, but why didn't Aldo want to dump his belt to go to 155? And Dana poo-pooed that idea and said, look, that performance against the Korean Zombie didn't
really... I think if you're the champion, you're the champion. And I'm not advocating that guys have to be real champions by fighting in multiple division. You got one guy that wants to do it now, Pettis.
So.
Yes. You want just open weight again. You just want open weight.
I want a single belt that everyone has to fight
you
for.
You want to go back to headbutts with Mark Coleman and let him win everything.
Yes.
I don't think a guy has to jump around weight class. I honestly don't think that's fair. We've talked about this before on the show, where I think we're seriously getting to that point where we're going to look between that 185 and 205 division and say, hey, this 20 pounds maybe not fair to these guys. Do we need 3.5-pound weight divisions like some boxing divisions have sanctioned? No, we don't need that. And I don't think an expectation is fair of a guy like Jose Aldo to say, hey, you're going to come up and wait. His manager needs to shut up the night after. Why does everybody feel compelled? They feel compelled.
I'm going to tell you why.
To just talk and talk and talk the night of fights.
I'm going to tell you why. Because somebody has made an entire career out of it. And the problem is that you can look at a guy like Chael P. Sonnen and go, well, if that's the, you know, you saw it this week between Roy Nelson and Uriah Faber on Twitter going back and forth about how come Uriah Faber gets all these title shots? What does he do that I don't do? And the answer is win. But you see Chael has set this formula up, and so
everybody thinks they can do it now. Manager,
yes, and nobody's as good as he is. That's
the
problem.
I want everybody in MMA circles to listen very, very carefully.
Sounds like you're making a Venn diagram MMA circles.
It's close, and maybe we should put one together and put it on our Facebook page.
Yes, I will do that right now.
But listen to this answer when one of your... George St. Pierre is great at this, by the way, too. Listen, when somebody calls out your fighter, calls out somebody in your camp, says something mean about your mother... Whatever happens on fight night in the cage,
okay,
we would love to put our fighter in the best matchups that we in the UFC see fit in the future. There's your answer. You don't have to respond to the guy. You don't even have to say his freaking name.
Nope.
That's your response. And if you're not a fighter, that should be your only response. You should never be speaking for a fighter, because I really think, and it's kind of picked up steam over these past couple of days and this past week since the card, a lot of people are saying, oh, Aldo's ducking him. All of a sudden, you have a champion in his division that has been dominant since he's gotten that belt and has been one of the top pound-for-pound guys on your rankings.
Yep.
It's a guy, oh, wow.
And he should be.
He should be. And he's all of a sudden, because his manager said a couple of things about, oh, you got to come to our weight. And like you said,
you got to give away your belt. Wear these shorts.
Yeah, we're going to fight in the ocean. I mean... His manager starts saying these things, and this is the perception. It's perception versus reality. It's impact versus intent. Whatever the intent was to protect his fighter, the impact was when you said these things publicly, a lot of guys start going, what, are you scared to fight this guy? And the fight's not even happening. So if his manager didn't need to answer any of these questions, because, I mean, conceivably, if we look and believe at the UFC timeline at this point, TJ Grant's the next fight. So you've now got your fighter scared to fight a fighter he can't even prove he's not scared to fight because that guy's got another fight lined up. Well done. Well done. Just because
I told you we needed a diagram.
You had to answer it 4 a.m, didn't you? What, they called us out last night? I better send something to the media. Shut up, managers.
Do you think the Grant fight will happen, early 2014?
I mean,
we're booked up at this point. They've already bounced Ronda Rousey to co-main event. They're not going to put her third.
No, we don't have TJ Grant booked for a fight.
No.
He's not officially booked.
Dana said that's the next fight. I just think every time Dana says TJ Grant's the next fight, he ends up sitting out again.
The good thing for TJ Grant, like I said, he hasn't fought in a while. There's nothing to get in the way here. And that 8 weeks, I think we're not going to see that till next year. I think you're right. I mean, you have the 8 weeks for the injury for Pettis.
Then 8 weeks for camp.
To reset that, yeah. We're going to see that next year. That 8 weeks isn't a huge deal to TJ Grant either. I never say wait for the champ, but if the champ's your next fight, go ahead and wait.
And we will. When we come back, we'll talk Josh Barnett. We'll talk Chad Mendez, Ben Rothwell, Dustin Poirier, and Eric Koch. UFC 164. We'll break it down next. It's Way of the Warrior. We'll fight till it.
Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. Talked a little Aldo, talked about Pettis, what's next for him. And UFC 164 had a lot of other action. Josh Barnett made his triumphant return to the UFC with the absolute dismantling of Frank Mir that some are calling an early stoppage.
Okay, let me set up some of the people that think this was an early stoppage. I'll point it out first, myself. I think this was an early stoppage.
Okay.
Number two on my list, Dana White.
Okay.
Thinks it was an early stoppage. Number three on my list, maybe not surprisingly, Frank Mir thinks it was an early stoppage. Number four on the list, Josh Barnett, the man who won the fight and stopped the fight, thinks it was an early stoppage.
Let me pause there in our Let's Pretend We're a Lawyer Talking About MMA segment of the show and say Josh Barnett is the same guy who said that he wanted to murder him in the cage. So I'm not really sure that his testimony in the early stoppage, it means the same thing as Frank Mir's if he means murder.
Now, I don't think he meant murder. But again, it's Josh Barnett, so I will not discount it, and I will not discount your argument there. But you can believe that Josh Barnett was handily winning that fight and was going to finish that fight in moments, and that the clock was on and the time was up, and whatever metaphor you want to use in this situation, you can believe all of that, which I believe. And you can also believe that this was an early stoppage and a bad stoppage. Those aren't mutually exclusive opinions, which is most, not all, but most of the argument I'm seeing about this early stoppage. Oh, it was going to be over anyways. No, it's not going to be over. And again, it doesn't help Frank Mir after the fight. Well, I dropped down because I didn't want to eat any more of those. You dropped down because you got punched real hard.
Yes. Face
real hard.
I saw that part many, many times to make sure, and he collapsed. He didn't go down to protect himself.
He does collapse, but he doesn't belly out, as you call it.
No.
So he goes down, he realizes he's on the ground, he's got his elbows on the ground, he realizes, and this is a veteran fighter. I mean, this guy's been fighting in UFC for a decade at this point. This is a veteran fighter that when he's on the ground, he was shaken up, he knew he had to do something. You see him, he's on his elbows. You see him thinking, now, what was he going to eat 10 punches from Josh Barnett and this fight was going to be over? That, very possibly. You can put it in 90%.
Yes.
You can go higher if you want. I don't care. For the sake of argument, though, you had a fighter who seemed to still have some of his senses, his instincts as a fighter to protect himself. He really never was given a chance to protect himself on the ground, and you can tell me this referee's credentials 1,000 times, it doesn't matter. Because Dana White called him out right after the fight, says this referee and his experience shouldn't be in a co-main event. I don't care that guy's judged 5,000 fights or whatever number you want to throw at me. How many times has this guy been in a cage with UFC main eventers? Heavyweights, too. I mean, you got to give some of these guys leeway. We complain some.
Yes, and this is the same guy, I believe, and this was also what clouded my judgment as the week has gone on and I've been able to reflect on it. It's the same ref that was reffing, I believe, the Pascal Krause fight, which, you know, he let Krause get knocked out 37 times in 4 minutes.
Well, that's the thing. You can't win for losing. I get that. But you have referees that are just treating fights wildly different on occasion.
In the same night.
And you've got the same ref.
Yes.
You've got
that's what I'm saying. Like, and I don't know. In my mind,
and earlier in the night, you saw all the same tweets. Did he realize that at some point? It's like, what? Why did you let that go on so long? And all of a sudden, it's in his head.
Yeah, this is
Frank Mir falls on the ground. Oh, it's over.
Right.
Game, fight's over. Guy fell on the ground. You got hit hard to get foot on the ground. But that's essentially how the fight ended. You fell on the ground, so I'm going to call this fight.
And I will say that I thought, as a whole, 164 was a great night of fights. But there certainly was a giant spotlight on these continued issues that we have in the UFC, which are refs with amazing credentials in one area that don't necessarily transfer over to the bright lights of the UFC, and still a ridiculous disparity in the people that are watching and judging these fights.
It does
ridiculous.
Seem interesting that they can do this. And I do want to go back to Robert Hines never responded to my tweet asking why he stopped the fight, so we couldn't get official comments.
Fair enough. We did not get official.
From
just
him
let it
on
be known
show.
We did not get an official
we
comment.
We made an attempt. We were efforting.
We tried our journalism 101 degree and it failed. Miserably.
What was the 30-27 fight? That
was
really...
that was the Camus-Kang fight.
Yeah.
And there was at no point...
That was the first fight on the preliminary card.
Yes. And Chico wins that by unanimous decision, but he did not win all three rounds.
No, that was the first round. He clearly lost,
yes.
Right? I don't know what to say. See, that's the problem, too, is we can spotlight it when we can, but it seems like, oh, well, at least the right guy won, so we have to move along to the fact that there was a fight later that should have been stopped. I mean, 10 times before it was. Same
right.
Guy does stop a fight after a guy falls on the ground. What? I don't know what we're doing.
Because if you look back at, let's say, Frank Mir and Brock Lesnar won, same sort of scenario that you could have stopped that fight before
you
the
could have stopped
submission.
That fight. He made a point in the big knock fight. He would have never had a chance to win that fight if a flash knockdown, again, not a knockout, a flash knockdown ends the fight. If you can knock a guy down and end the fight, you know, we would have seen Alistair Overeem win a couple weeks back.
Travis Brown would have been done.
Not a chance. Not a chance that fight should have kept going if you're using that criteria.
Check Congo, Pat Barry, kids.
We can just line them up. We can line them up. You've got to give these guys some room to fight. Fighter safety has to be top of mind. It doesn't hurt anything. Let's say he's KO'd or he's on the ground. It doesn't hurt anything to let Barnett go in there and try to land another shot. I mean, he was in Barnett's way already. There was no question in that referee's mind, I think, as soon as Frank started to come to the ground, that he was going to be knocked out. And he wasn't, and that was the mistake.
And I don't know how you write that mistake, because when you use all of these heavyweight examples, the Pat Barry Czech Congo fight is the one that stands out in my mind. Certainly the Overeem Travis Brown fight stands out in my mind. Two fights where the entire dynamic of the fight changes after said person could have been counted out of the fight, so to speak.
Oh, yeah.
And so you can't rewind time and give that back to Frank Mir and see what would happen. I'm in agreement with you. 90-95% of the time, Barnett's going to certainly tear through him, and that's the end of the fight regardless. But there's that 5% rule that maybe he's going to stand up, check Congo style, and knock him out.
Well, and he's a guy, too. You always want to give Frank Mir a chance if he's on the ground. Even if the other guy's standing up, looking for a leg pick, looking to sweep, looking to do something where he's on the ground. I mean, that's what this sport is supposed to be, and he didn't have a chance to do that. It was a glaring example in a co-main event. I mean, a lot of people bought this card for both fights. I certainly did at my house.
Absolutely.
That Frank Mir Barnett fight was amazingly interesting to me, and we didn't really get to see Barnett come out with that big win, which I think Barnett wanted to, and that's why he said, it was stopped too early. As soon as somebody asks a fighter if that fight was stopped too early, it was probably something that they would like to have been more definitive on and been able to put a punctuation on, and that's something you let the heavyweights do. You let them finish the fight, and you let them send the crowd home happy.
Yep.
That's why you hire these big dudes.
Yeah. I was just going to say, that's why you put them on the card.
They're not the most nimble guys. They're usually not the quickest, but they're the hardest hitting, and that's what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to finish fights, and you had two guys on there that were going to put on a show somehow or another, and I think if you let that fight go just a little bit longer, you see one of two things. You either see a definitive finish, or you see Frank Mir able to hold on, and we see more of this fight, and we know more of what's going to happen. Do I think there should be a rematch? No, that's the problem. And that's why Frank Mir is so upset, too.
Because
he was dominated.
He knows that there shouldn't be a rematch.
Yeah, for that time that he was in there, he was dominated. But he never had that chance once he got knocked down. And I think the referee had his mind made up as soon as Frank started to go to the ground that he was going to call it. And that's too quick a decision for a referee to make.
Third fight on the card, Chad Money Mendez makes his case to be the next one for Aldo, depending on what happens.
Ooh.
As he was the first person in history to stop Clay Guida with a TKO in the third round. Not sure what you do with Clay Guida at this point, since he's lost. Well, he won a grind out decision as first time at 145 and then gets knocked out his second time around. So I'm not really sure where that puts him. Mendez is 4-0 since losing to Aldo. All of them are KOs and TKOs. This guy, I know that Lamas thinks he's next. I get all that, but to me...
You thought Lamas was next last week.
Yeah, but I mean, when you tear through guys and are able to do this 4 in a row, it makes a really compelling case, especially when you don't want to fight Anthony Pettis.
Oh, man. Can you imagine if Jose Aldo, though, fights a guy he already beat after everybody's saying he doesn't want to fight Pettis.
Right.
I'll fight somebody. Oh, yeah, you'll fight somebody you already beat once.
Right, yeah.
Even though you're right, Eric, he's probably way back into that circle.
Would you put Lamas ahead of him? I just think
I would at this point simply because he's already got the loss to Aldo, and that's a situation where when you're trying to sell this fight, he beat Clay Guida. That's impressive. That's very impressive. He stopped him. Nobody's done it. But most fans at this point think of Guida as that guy that hops around. They do. Like, who's that guy that's cardio all day long? But that's what most people think of. Is that your big impressive win to get to the championship? I don't know. It's 145. Maybe it doesn't matter at that point because we're going to see it on Fox Sports 1 and they don't have to make money on it. But that's where we are here. You don't have that with Lamas, at least.
Okay, fair enough.
There you go.
Brandon Vera goes up to heavyweight and gets TKO'd by Ben Rothwell in the third round at a minute 54. Vera starting to look good. Didn't have enough to win that.
I wouldn't say good.
He was picking up and starting to look like his speed could have been something. It was just the power was missing at heavyweight. And the problem I have, Ken, before you go, is I don't really know what to do with Rothwell because
I don't know why they didn't give him the King of the Cage championship after he won the fight. I thought they should present him with that belt that they buy at Kmart, and that's what you do. You let him have his King of the Cage title shot because that's all that fight was good for. I looked at that fight with both of these guys coming in, and again, they're heavyweights at least. We'll see some banging happening there, but I'm like, I don't know what you do with either of these guys if they win, honestly, at that point. I mean, maybe if Brandon Vera wins, you can start making that case as, oh, good, the promise is finally fulfilled, but that didn't happen. So you got Ben Rothwell. What do you do with him? I don't know.
I don't know what to do with him because heavyweight's getting really, really busy and really, really convoluted. We talked about it a minute ago.
Is that really convoluting the scene? Is anybody saying, oh, get him in there with Dos Santos? Come on, Cain Velasquez.
Certainly nobody's saying get him in there with Dos Santos. No. My point is when you have a controversial win by Barnett, a loss by Mir, you have Cormier out there. Like, what do you do with all of these guys?
Let Mir beat up Rothwell.
Fine, deal.
Can we do that?
Sign me up. Done deal. And then kicking off the main card, Dustin Poirier ekes out a win over Eric Koch. A big, big win for Poirier after a long layoff. And we talked earlier about the Lim-Pascal Krause fight, and that was awarded Fight of the Night. And I'm assuming it was only awarded Fight of the Night because it was the first time in UFC history a fighter has been knocked out 77 times.
Yeah, they just want to pay him. You saw the NFL settlement this past week. They figure if they just hand enough money, they don't have to worry about any future health issues.
Knockout of the night went to Mendez. Submission of the night went to Pettis, each of them picking up $50,000 each.
That submission, I've watched it a couple times.
It's ridiculous.
I don't remember in a big fight that point, that arm pivot. I've been trying to think, and
it's kind of, like I told you, it's kind of an old school thing to trap that arm, you know. And you're seeing some of these old school things come back, especially with a guy like Pettis, who's you heard Joe Rogan talk a lot on Saturday night. You've even heard it a couple times, I believe, Wednesday night with the Z guard, which is something that people may not be familiar with, which is a kind of a nouveau version of a jiu-jitsu guard. Mm-hmm. When they're mixing up this old school and new school, and you're going to see that a lot out of the Rufus camp, and that's what you saw.
Yeah, that was a brutal looking submission. The more you looked at it and the more you realize what was happening, you understand why that was a verbal submission.
Yes,
it was a please, scream.
Please may I have my arm back.
It was a scream.
When we get back, we go to Fox Sports 1. Glover Teixeira, could he get past Ryan Bader? Does that make him the number one contender? All of it is next. It's Way of the Warrior.
Follow our Twitter account at Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. Had a busy, busy week. We're essentially going to take a layoff for a minute so that we can all enjoy the Canelo Alvarez Mayweather fight next weekend, because we don't have anything until the 21st of September.
Anything? It's 2 weeks.
When you have six a week, it seems like we're on some sort of a layoff. But Wednesday night we had Fox Sports 1, Glover Teixeira and Ryan Bader in Brazil as the main event. Glover absolutely starching Bader after some serious issues for Glover in the beginning of that fight.
Has he ever looked older in a fight? And we've been talking about his age a lot because the UFC just won't give the guy a title fight. I mean, he's 20-0 now. He was able to win. But, man, the first couple minutes of that fight, I wasn't sure if Glover was going to beat Ryan Bader, and he should by all accounts. And Ryan Bader's a good fighter and a great wrestler. He's in Brazil. He's fighting Ryan Bader. This is a fight where, barring a takedown of some sort, something strange happening as far as him pinning him down for a couple of rounds, it shouldn't have been as hard as it looked for Glover Teixeira. Certainly shouldn't have been the back-and-forth striking battle it was at the beginning of that fight, which is what was going on with Ryan Bader.
And Bader hurt him, and that's unfortunately what ended the night for Bader, as he rushed in using a very simple combination of one right hand.
Yeah, he threw a right.
I felt
right.
When I was watching it, I felt like I was playing you at some fighting game on Xbox.
It always works for me.
It doesn't work in real life, as you can see. Glover Teixeira gets the win, TKO, and immediately becomes the number one contender to face John Jones. Now, this is problematic for me anyway, on two accounts.
Or Alexander Gustafsson.
Yes, or Gustafsson.
poor Gustafsson.
More likely Jones. When Phil Davis burst onto the scene and everyone thought he was a contender, he ran into Rashad Evans and everyone was like, ooh, well, I'm glad he didn't show up to see John Jones because that would have been horrific.
Mm-hmm.
And after seeing this fight with Bader, you're like, yeah, you won. You're 20-0. All of that is impressive. But if you get in that sort of trouble with John Jones or even Alexander Gustafsson, that'll be all she wrote.
Yeah, that same thing is not going to happen. If he gets rocked in either of those fights, if we want to say that Gustafsson has a chance, either of those guys gets him on the ropes like Bader did, they're not running in with 10 right hands that you can kind of duck underneath and get your bearings on. You're going to get finished. You're going to see elbows. You're going to see knees. You're going to see feet. You're going to see every single body part in your face. You're going to feel like the human version of the Operation game as you're standing there getting picked apart. And That's not going to fly. I didn't see anything out of Glover Teixeira that makes me think he can beat either of those guys at this point. And Chuck Liddell says he's best light heavyweight in the UFC. He's on a 20-fight winning streak. I mean, I don't want to try to pick apart this guy who's won 20 fights in a row because that's amazing. I mean, might be one of the longest in the UFC, if not the longest. He's got 4 fights in the UFC. But as far as straight wins, 20 in a row? That's amazing.
No, it's
unheard of in MMA, but man,
yeah.
you've got John Jones. Is he the guy that can beat Chris Weidman to Anderson Silva to John Jones? I don't know. Maybe, but he certainly didn't look like it last night. And he said after the fight, the thing that I liked about it, he said after the fight, he said, this fight was a wake-up call to me. He goes, I took this fight lightly, and I got caught, and I almost lost this fight. So if that's true, he took the fight lightly, and he realizes that maybe he's not as good as, you know, Chuck's in the corner saying he is.
Right, your yes man is telling you.
Maybe he's got to train harder. Maybe he's got to have a game plan that works for him and against the fighter he's fighting. Maybe that will be his wake-up call. It doesn't always have to be a loss for a fighter. Sometimes it can be a situation where Ryan Bader starts beating you up when you're in Brazil 3 hours from where you were born. I'm not sure exactly what that means, by the way. But we heard it a lot, so I just wanted to let everybody know that he was born 3 hours from where he fought this week.
And John Jones came out after the fight and said, look, for everyone rallying behind the new number one contender, I want to let you know that Glover Teixeira is Rampage Jackson with better grappling.
He said that?
Yes.
Oh. Well, Rampage's grappling wasn't that great at the end of the UFC career.
No, it really wasn't. My favorite fight of the night, because he had been one of my favorite fighters for a long, long time, Jacare's absolute dismantling of Yushin Okami. That overhand right was scary, Ken.
This was a fight I wasn't sure either if we'd see this from Jacare. He's been kind of a fan favorite. He's been one of those strike force guys that we wanted to see do well. But I wasn't sure, especially against a tough guy like Okami, if he would show up and then all of a sudden you would see him in his second UFC fight and is he for real?
He's really real.
He beat Chris Camozzi. That was a great win for him. But we're not sure. I mean, other than that, I mean, Ed Herman, Derek Brunson, all those guys that he had beaten before. He's got the cool nickname. He's got the gator chomp he does.
Yeah, man, the gator chomp.
Yes, I knew you were excited by that. Woo! But, I mean, he's also a guy that lost to Luke Rockhold.
Who?
Yes, Luke Rockhold. There's a stain on your soul, by the way. Benson Henderson's talking about Anthony Pettis being a stain. I don't even want to know what kind of streak Luke Rockhold is in your laundry.
But Yushin Okami is a guy who's been in there with every single guy at 185 who's important.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacare tore right through him. So that has to say something. Yes, he was beat by Luke Rockhold. Perhaps that's a different Jacare. Because this Jacare and that overhand right, coupled with his jiu-jitsu background, his grappling background, that's a scary guy at 185 pounds.
He is, and it should be interesting, too. And a lot of people were saying, oh, man, it's too bad Anderson doesn't have the belt, and we got to go through all this stuff to maybe see an Anderson-Jacare fight now, which I think is very interesting.
Right.
They're close enough now where if Anderson were to win,
we could do that tomorrow, right?
Yeah, they're 3 hours away.
Where they were born.
Yeah, that's what I heard. This is going to be interesting to see where he goes next, because I don't think he can wait. I don't think he's at the top of the title hunt there. I mean, you still got Vitor screaming at 185. Bisping's probably not shutting up, even though he shouldn't be anywhere near it.
Well, Bisping's got
Munoz. That might be a great fight for Jacare.
Well, Bisping's got Munoz. I would say the winner of that one, that's a great fight, either Munoz or Bisping.
Yeah, I would take either of those guys. I want to see one more fight, and then we see what happens here. But Jacare beat a very tough Okami. I thought that was a little early. Was that just
Are
me?
Are you insane? What about that was
He's
a little
Japanese.
Early?
He's Okami. He's tough.
His head looked like it was going to come. I don't know that I've seen a human head do that from an overhand right. That was crazy.
Eat radioactive fish there, Eric. Okay. You give him a little more time.
Fair enough. Joseph Benavidez, he made short work of Formiga. Round one, 307 with a TKO. Another brutal stoppage. And a guy who, again, climbing right back up to get in that title contention.
Literally missed that fight because I walked in my kitchen for a minute.
I didn't miss it. I watched the whole thing, but I thought the same thing. You know, Silva and Benavidez, this could go a minute or nothing.
Yeah, didn't it? What was it? It was about 2 minutes.
It was a couple
officially.
Minutes. There was a minute of feeling out, so I'll call it 2 minutes.
Well, it was 2 minutes. I mean, whatever you want to call it.
It was 3:07, so a minute of feeling out. You know, what was interesting about this fight, though, as we get deeper into the Fox Sports 1 relationship, 5,000 people in attendance. So an interesting model that we might see some more intimate fights in the UFC with things like Glover Teixeira and Ryan Bader at the headline.
Yeah, I wasn't very sure either about this. What was the venue there? What does that hold?
Was that a
sellout crowd in Brazil?
I don't believe it was sellout.
It looked insane,
but, yeah,
especially for 5,000 people. I mean, let's compare that. You go to a minor league ball game in the United States. Those crowds don't look like that.
No, they don't look nearly as excited to see Glover Teixeira as they do at minor league ballparks. So, but an interesting thing is, as Ken, we've been trying to figure out, what does this look like, this bi-weekly free fights on Fox Sports 1 coupled with pay-per-views, coupled with some one-offs here and there that we have to do because they're on the schedule. What does that look like? And I think if you use a model of, let's say, a big band, Metallica, mm-hmm. Pearl Jam, the Eagles, something like that. It's always interesting when they do a couple of these, what they call intimate shows, and how those can be really special nights for the people that get to be there.
Well, let's use your example and say you're not going to see Pearl Jam in a tiny venue, but you might see Eddie Vedder show up in a 2,000-seat theater to do some acoustic stuff. That's essentially what that main event of Teixeira Bader is. That's some acoustic stuff from the UFC in a smaller venue. What's interesting about this, maligning the reputation of this card so much for the past couple weeks. I wouldn't say we quite went that far, but we were looking at this like, what? This is ridiculous. It's in Brazil. Teixeira not doing as well as he should have actually makes this a couple of days later look like a more interesting card than it was.
Yes.
So this is an entirely different discussion. I was perfectly satisfied with what was on Fox Sports 1 and thought it was a great outing for the first not Chael Sonnen card on Fox Sports 1. The first card.
Is that a thing now? The first not? The second not Chael Sonnen card?
Well, I mean, I would call it a pay-per-view level card, but that's, you know, that's what Chael does.
Sure.
And it's causing problems with the fight with Vanderlei, by the way, which we can talk about later. The first card on Fox Sports 1 looks a lot better considering Glover had that problem in the first round.
Yep.
Because if he goes through and he tears through Bader, we probably look at the card like, well, the Jacare thing was good. But man, that was about it.
But you had, you had four fights in a row that were awesome. The Pitor fight, him coming back and getting that submission in round two. I mean, this was a great fight overall, and such an intimate venue. Like I said, a really interesting model that I'd love to see them do at different points in.
They were not bad fights. There were a lot of fun, good fights in there. But and the cool thing was too is once you turn it on after 5 o'clock, you had fights all night because they show the prelims right on Fox Sports 1 too. But this situation where we're not remembering anything unless we see fighters that we know.
Yes.
And we didn't really know anybody until we got into the Benavides. Final two fights.
Yeah.
We know Benavides as well. I didn't watch as much WEC as you did. So.
Fair enough.
You get into the final two or three fights, Benavides is in there. You can throw him in there. But that's the perception of these cards. That's fine, but I'll be honest. As somebody who has a kid, who has a lot going on,
right.
I didn't see all of those prelim cards, even though they're sitting there.
Right.
So everybody talking about those cards, especially on Wednesdays.
Yes.
Hey, the fights are all there. People are going to love it. It's going to ramp up for 8 hours. I didn't spend 8 hours on fights on a Wednesday.
When we come back, what's left of news and anything else, it's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show. Girl, you know what it do. Girl, give it to me. I got something brand new. Girl, give it to me.
I put it. Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans, covering everything in the world of mixed martial arts. Part of the Fight Fans Radio Network and available on the iHeartRadio Talk platform. Just search MMA and you will find us instantly. Also available on iTunes and Stitcher. All across the internet, on Twitter and Facebook by searching WOW Show. And that should just about cover every way possible that you can find us. We talked about Frank Mir in segment one. What is next for Frank Mir? Well, it looks like a loser leaves town match, so to speak. UFC 167, that is rumored to where Chael Sonnen and Rashad Evans will fight. It is also now a major fight that's been made official between Alistair Overeem and Frank Mir. Five losses, between the two of them, with, I would say, Overeem more on the line than Frank Mir. Frank Mir is a guy that people want to see, and Overeem needs to still prove himself in the UFC. So look for that. UFC 167, a huge, huge fight that we are really excited about. The Ream and Frank Mir should be a great one. And then Saturday night was supposed to be Bellator. It will still happen, although it will happen without Joe Warren. The Kentwood native has been deemed medically unfit by the Athletic Regulation Commission, saying that he cannot fight on Saturday night. A quote comes out saying that I've been fortunate to work with one of the best commissioners in the sport in Mike Mazzulli, and after carefully reviewing Joe's medical documents, everyone agreed to err on the side of caution and the goal of ensuing the fighter's safety, so says Bjorn Rebney, CEO of Bellator. It was determined that Joe will be unable to compete on Saturday at the Mohegan Sun. He's been with us since the beginning and is the case with every fighter here. It is incumbent to me to ensure that Joe is 100% healthy and cleared to fight before he steps into the cage. Now, nothing has been made about what the actual medical condition is, but as of right now, he is medically unfit to fight, so he will not fight coming up. Speaking of commissions, the NSAC, the Nevada Athletic Commission, has raised, we've talked a lot about marijuana in testing and how kind of weird it is that it's such a thing that people are saying is needing to be regulated against, marijuana. So what did they do? You would think that they would lower the threshold, but in some sort of stroke of genius, I guess, as influential as they are, they have raised the threshold by 300% from 50 to 150 metabolites per milliliter, I believe is the actual medical way that they walk it through, but raising it 300%. Now, will they catch a lot more fighters? Probably, but to what end? I'm still one of these people that I just think pot, weed, marijuana, whatever you want to call it, I don't know that it's something that makes it that it's some sort of performance enhancing drug. Am I somebody who thinks you should be drunk or high when you fight? No. You want to do that test the night of? I'm all for that. But I think testing afterwards and finding these metabolites in their body and then finding them and increasing that threshold by 300%, almost ensuring that you will find some if they had any contact with the drug, seems to be a little bit on the crazy side. Speaking on the crazy side, GSP has talked about the VADA testing. Lots of people having very different opinions on the VADA testing. Some people are all for it. Some people think it's really intrusive because essentially they can show up at any time and test you, ruin your sleep, ruin your training schedule and that sort of thing. But it's the best way at this point to test and make sure that everyone is cleared. So says GSP. However, Johnny Hendricks, his opponent, who agreed originally to take the VADA testing, has not even followed through to sign up for the testing. So at this point, he has not been tested to the same degree that GSP has. What that will affect the fight
or how it will, I should say. Too early to tell. But at this point, Hendricks has not even signed up, so has not been tested at all. We talked about Stefan Struve, and Dana White said this week that he doesn't think that Struve will ever fight again. And I'm not sure I disagree. Dana said he's got a rip in his heart. It's one of those things that happens. It's a freak thing. It happens to people. But at this point, I don't see any way that Stefan Struve gets back in the cage. We'll have to wait and see. Struve's a strong kid, but I don't disagree with Dana White. If I were him, it would be a very dangerous thing and something I wouldn't be rushing to do anytime soon. You need anything this weekend, make sure you follow along Twitter and Facebook at Wow Show. It is Way of the Warrior. We will catch you next week. Talk a little Mayweather and Canelo, and then get you ready for Jones and Gustafson. It's next week. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.